You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. Today I am talking to Sam Jay, and it's hard for me really to express just how incredible I think Sam Jay is. She is one of my very favourites, and she has just everything. She's the complete package and more that you weren't expecting. She's just brilliantly funny, totally engaging, genuinely has something to say, and she's got punchlines on top of punchlines on top of punchlines and a completely fresh perspective, and not just as a minority in all sorts of different ways, but with really fresh things to say about the combination of life experiences that she's gone through. And although perhaps not my most walk in the park of an interview, this one, there are some moments in this conversation which are suffused with brilliant, brilliant advice. No extras on this one. We spoke for an hour and that was that. And I think you, by the time you've heard this, she will have gone back to the States, or certainly won't be in the UK anymore. But the next time, if you're listening in the UK, you get the chance to see Sam, do yourself a favour. She is extraordinary. This is Sam Jay. So how was last night?
It was fun. I had fun.
You had a bunch of shows, right? You had you were here at Soho.
Yeah.
And then you're doing sets.
Yeah, there's a little popping sets around. Trying to feel London out as much as I can.
This is your first visit?
Yes.
And did you have a big night?
Did I have a big night?
In the sense of, did you do shows, and then stay up until 5 o'clock in the morning?
I stayed until like 3:30. Okay, yeah, I stayed until like 3:30. Did some shows, went out, met some weird people at a jazz bar that took us to the casino with a bar on the roof.
Okay.
And then told us they were in the Illuminati, and so we ran away.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is not, I mean, I don't believe that is a usual London experience.
Yeah,
but
it was weird.
I suppose coming to a foreign city and having an insane experience that you have to run away from, maybe that's like a good way.
Yeah, we like definitely had to book it. We like acted like we were going to the bathroom and then we like ran away.
Oh my God.
It was a little weird.
Okay. Yeah. And we is you and your girlfriend.
Girlfriend, yeah.
Who is present at the shows.
Yeah.
I heard her laughing. I assume there were like, I've never met her.
Everyone was laughing, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are specific, you know, I know what it's like to hear a comic's partner laugh at a detail that is separate to the meat of everything else laughing at.
Yeah, she's funny.
I saw you first at South by Southwest earlier this year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Esther's Follies.
Yes, and I love that room.
Such a fun room. I think I said to you afterwards, actually, I will have walked past you in the corridor, not in a way that you'd remember. You destroyed that room. Like, I don't think I've seen... I was running back to the green room going, have you fucking seen Sanjay? And it was like, yes, we've all seen Sanjay. Because you're new. I'm from the UK.
Yeah,
we don't have as
like
much of a presence over here.
Fucking Animal and all these motherfuckers that know me very well. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. You absolutely murdered that place.
That's a fun room. That's a fun room to do stand-up in. I think it's easy when it's fun, you know? When you're having fun, it's like, when the crowds are fun and they're into it, it's easy to, like, not destroy, but it doesn't even feel like crushing. You just feel like it's just good-ass time.
It just feels like what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah, it just feels like what it's supposed to feel like. Yeah, exactly. It just feels like a good time. You leave kind of feeling like, oh, this was a great conversation. You know what
I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though it's kind of not one, it kind of is one.
Well, you're very conversational, I think, in your style. And you also have kind of a conversation with yourself as you're doing it. Like, I notice you kind of, you like laughing at, you, I don't mean you laugh at your own jokes, but like...
I laugh at my own jokes.
Well, okay, fine.
I don't feel bad about that. I don't know. Comics get all fucking weird about that. I don't give a shit. If it's funny to me, it's funny to me. I mean, I wouldn't say half the shit if I didn't think it was funny. Like, I initially have to laugh at it for me to even want to do it.
Yeah.
The whole intrigue is like, are they going to laugh at it too? So you have to think it's funny. And sometimes, like, especially if it's just something I thought of right on stage, it just makes me chuckle. It's like, oh, that's a very ridiculous idea.
You also have, several times during the show last night, you would stop, chuckle, and go, that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Like,
because it's just like a little bit living in your head, you know, especially here because the crowds are so fucking quiet that you're just like, you're kind of like keeping yourself in the conversation by talking to yourself.
Yeah, right. Okay. Because I know, I mean, I, having seen you just kill in South By and then knowing you were coming to Soho, particularly Soho on a weekday, London crowds are very, very different, especially at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to be in Top Secret at midnight. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's...
I've been doing that too, though, so that's fun.
So there's a different feeling?
Yeah, for sure. That's just like a just going and level the room type of situation.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So how have you found, like... Do you find that's an easy gear change for you to go, oh, it's like this? Like when you did your first show here, we're recording in Soho Theatre, were you taken by surprise by, oh, this is a very reserved audience?
No, I mean, I knew it coming in. Like, everybody warns you. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody in America's like, hey, bruh, you know, just so you know, they don't laugh like how they laugh here. Like, they're way more reserved. So I think you kind of have a sense of it. I had a sense of it. I didn't realize how jarring it was going to be for me. Like, I knew it was going to happen, but then I was like, oh, this sucks, because, like, you just don't have a sense of what it is, because, I don't know, my style of comedy is so conversational, and I don't do, like, a themed-out show. Mm. It's like I have these topics that I know I want to get to, and I have, like, these kind of big ideas that are, like, the bridges. But then the middle stuff is kind of just felt out on stage, and it just kind of depends on the audience, the energy, and what's going on. And so it was hard to, like, find where to take the leaps when they're not reacting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you feel a little lost. Like, oh, I'm just kind of up here. You know what I mean? It does feel a little bit like, then it just feels like you're talking to your fucking self. It feels a little, you're like nutty a little bit.
You're like a rolling energy comic. You're one of those people, you detonate, and then as it's kind of all exploding, that's your kind of surfing on top of that, right? The energy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So when you can't, like, get the detonation to go, you're just kind of like, all right, you know, you're just on stage kind of feeling like a little lost. I think I was feeling a little like, ugh, why don't they just do it what I want them to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A little bit of that frustration of like, why don't they just do it the way I want it to happen so that I can do the thing at my best? Because, you know, you just want crowds to see you at your optimum. And it's like, oh, man, I can't even get to my optimum because you guys won't do the thing that I need you to do for me to do the thing. Yeah. It is very... it's a mutual relationship, you know, at least the way I do it. And I think here they're very much used to, like, I have a package. I deliver this thing the same way every night. You could be here or not be here if this is what I'm going to say. And I just don't do stand up like that at all. So I think we're learning each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
I had to figure out them. And I think through the set, they kind of figure me out as well.
Your stuff is so, like, there's at the end of your album, Donna's Daughter, which has those kind of interludes in it. So in between the material, there's interludes where there's snatches of conversation of you talking to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of quite, I guess, deliberately sort of like parts of them are more audible than other parts. And it's kind of like a miasma of like a... I don't know quite what it is. I'll let you describe it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't mean that I don't know what it is. I mean that it's like, it feels to me deliberately vague.
Yes.
So that parts of it, like words and concepts and snatches of conversation spring out of it.
Yes.
So it's almost like rummaging around in your mind.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Did I get that? Okay, cool. That's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
The one at the end of the album, you're having a conversation, I guess, with another comic?
Yes.
Who is that? Who's the
David Bory.
Okay. I don't know. Oh, I do know David Gabori.
Yeah.
Okay, right. I've met him. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I didn't know who that was him.
That's my boy.
And you're talking about the way in which some comics are on stage just for the adoration.
Yeah.
They're not there because they've got something to say. I think you said there's like I've got some shit in my head that I've got to get out.
Right.
So how does that fit into, like, that's clearly, like, I heard that and I went, yeah, that's completely how Sam sees comedy. How does that fit into the shows that you're doing here? And that stuff when the audience is a bit more reserved. Can you still...
Well, you know, I think I figured it out last night. For the first time, at least, it felt good completely to me. Like, right. It felt like a me set. It felt whole. It felt like I was getting what I needed to get out of it, you know, because it's like... You're not up there for no fucking reason. Like, there's something that you, and you just feel it as a comic. It's like, you know when you got to nut and you know when you didn't get to nut. And I feel like I got to nut last night. I was like, okay, this is all finally feeling the way I wanted it to feel. But I think it took a bit of a breakdown Wednesday night.
Okay, go on. So tell me about that. Tell me about that.
I just got frustrated. I don't know if it was even frustration. I just wanted to know why these audiences were like that. It was just like, I felt like I was up there alone again. And I was like, oh, this is such a painstaking conversation to get through if nobody fucking reacts to it does anything. Then you're just like, ugh, it's like pulling yourself through this thing. And I was feeling that way. It just wasn't feeling fluid. You know, it was feeling very choppy. In a way that I don't like, but the fluidity comes from, like you said, being able to ride the energy. And so I was just like, this doesn't feel fluid, and this just feels unnatural. And if I don't acknowledge this, then I'm going to feel fucking weird because I feel it, and I need to know what it is. So I just pulled up a stool, and I was just like, why don't you guys laugh at stuff?
How did that go?
And they were quiet. They just kind of looked at me, and I was like, I don't have a joke. I'm not going to be mean to you. I just want to know for myself, like, what is the reason? Is it a cultural thing of respect? Is it just like you're kind of just waiting and you want me to prove? I don't, like, what is it? Because I don't know what it is. And at this point, it's just driving me insane. And then somebody finally just spoke, and she was just like, I just think that... She's like, we're all enjoying you.
Oh, she actually gave you a genuine answer. Yeah. That's kind of incredibly useful.
And she was just like, no, we're all enjoying you. I just think it's the Brits' way to kind of sit back and let you do your thing, and we kind of don't want to, like, step on your toes. Sure. But we're having a good time. You know, it's like... We just talked about it. And I was just like, oh, okay, because, you know, as an American, I'm broken, and so I need... I do this for your approval. So if I don't get it, it feels very fucking weird. You know what I mean? Then you feel exposed, I guess. Yeah. More so. Even though you're exposed up there, you feel more exposed when you're not getting the approval that you're seeking from the audience to some level. And so we talked it out. Then I told a really abstract joke that I've never tried that kind of didn't work. And then I left. And... I felt good about it because I was like, that was me. I was being honest, and I didn't allow the thing to kind of consume me. I just confronted it, which is kind of what I like to do. And then Thursday, when I went back, I felt freer. I don't know why. I was just like, okay, now I get why they're doing this. I'm less worried about them doing it because I have a sense of what's going on out there. So I guess I still needed to figure out a way to feel connected to them, to be connected to the experience. To be able to do the set the way I like to do
it. Yeah, yeah. And last night you opened, because that was the show I saw, and you opened with some material about how you find us reserved, which I guess enables you to take charge of that.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than... Exactly. Yes. Because it is weird if it's not the way you're used to doing stand-up. It is a little weird.
And how long have you been doing stand-up?
Six years, maybe six and a half, seven. I don't know, somewhere in six or seven.
And how long have you been crushing it like you did in Texas?
I don't know, like six, 7 years. No, seriously. I don't know. It's just, you know, that shit is hit or miss. Sometimes you crush it, sometimes you fucking bomb. And it's just the state of it forever, I think.
Do you remember having a first bit of material or a first kind of attitude on stage that was the first moment that it really exploded?
Yeah, I would say my Mad Men bit was like the first bit that I had that I was like, this shit's smart.
I don't know the bit.
And nobody's like writing jokes like this.
What's the premise of the bit?
The premise of the bit is that I never understood what white men were complaining about when they said they were losing the country until I watched three seasons of Mad Men. And then I realized, like, they lost every fucking thing. And I just go into this whole, like, setup and things. But, yeah, I think that was the first bit where I was like, yeah, this is... on par with the type of stuff I want to be writing consistently.
Okay. And what is that? What was that?
Yeah,
stuff
the Zelda bit was also probably, and that was before the Madman bit. So the Zelda bit and then the Madman bit. Those were two big, like, pivotal bits for me where I was like, okay, this is the level that you want to be writing at all the time.
Yeah. Because, and what is it? What were the signifiers of that? What does that level mean? It's kind of, it's intelligent, it's layered, it's funny in a club, it has a point of view on culture.
All that.
All of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because so many of your bits last night, even like the Blackfish bit, which is a great bit, and I don't know if you want to sort of talk about it. I never know how much of people's stuff to reveal. I don't want to give it away. But there's a bit about Blackfish. Now, Blackfish was, in the UK at least, that was very current a few years ago when it came out. Mm-hmm. So when you started, I was thinking, oh, is this like an older bit? But the point that you're making is such a relevant and contemporary...
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I think that that's always the weird thing that comics do that's, like, weird to me is they write off topics like, well, I can't talk about Blackfish because that happened. And it's like, I don't give a shit when something happened. If it makes sense to me and right now, then it makes sense to me right now.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not writing bits like that are dependent on, like, it's not about the fucking documentary. It's just about a bigger sense of the world.
Sure,
and
sure.
This documentary led me into this bigger sense of the world. So it's just like, whatever. Like, I don't know. I just don't care about stuff like that. Like, I'll tell a fucking joke about Clueless if I fucking feel like it's relevant to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So where does that confidence come from? A lot of what you're exuding on stage is a sense of, this is the way I see the world, this is the way I see it, and you can come along for the ride or not. What is it in your personality? What is it in your childhood or whatever? What is that? Where does that come from?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I think I just, when I decided that I wanted to do this, I think, wow, interesting. I think that stand-up, for me, was just such a escape and also a place to be myself. It was just the first thing I ever did that I felt completely myself. Like, I didn't have to compromise any part of my personality or who I was to do it. And so it's just like, for me, if it doesn't feel honest up there, it feels gross. And I don't want the thing that I really like to do to ever feel gross. So I just do everything I can to avoid feeling gross up there.
What were you doing before?
All types of shit, man. I worked at a Starbucks. I worked at a Best Buy. I worked at a Circus City. I worked at a Sprint store. I worked at a bad... I was just doing mad bullshit jobs. I worked at a mailroom before. I worked for, like, an old people home doing, like, medical records, whatever jobs I could. I hated working. So I would always be places, like, 2 months, 3 months, and then quit, go do some other meaningless job. I just felt like they were all meaningless anyway, so who gave a shit? You know, like my parents passed away, but like my aunts and stuff, they would get like all like, you know, why do you keep changing jobs? And I'm like, who fucking cares? These are all dumb. It's not career, so who gives a shit if I change it 30 times, you know?
And did you have any idea of what you wanted from a career?
No, I didn't know at all. I didn't know how I would even get to a career, to be honest. That didn't seem like a thing that was really possible for me. Like, I dropped out of college. I wasn't really into school in the sense that I just think I never was in the right schools. You know what I mean? Like, I probably would have thrived in like a Oberlin type situation. And, you know,
what's that? I don't know what that
is. Oberlin's like kind of like a private college, kind of like where a bunch of like Montessori kids would go, like, okay, on that Montessori type shit.
Yeah.
But I just didn't like traditional school. It just never worked for me. So I went to college just to get away, honestly, just to get the fuck out of Boston. But I knew I wasn't going to stay there. And I knew I wanted to do something creative, but I really didn't know what that was going to be or even if it was going to happen. I had no sense of it. I just knew I liked being around creatives and I liked being in creative spaces and I liked talking ideas. I used to be like, I want to work for a think tank. I think I could do that. I didn't really even know what that meant. I just knew it was like people were getting paid to think shit. And I was like, I'd be thinking, you know, and that sounds cool. But I had no sense of any of those worlds to really figure it out. It's so funny. I was just saying that to my girlfriend last night. I was like, you know, like, it wasn't until I got into stand-up that I even knew you could go to college for it. You know, like, I was in Boston, and Emerson was down the street from me, and I had no idea that they had stand-up courses, that they had comedy. I had no idea that you could go to college for comedy. Had I known that, I probably would have stayed in college and went to college for comedy because it's something I was really into. Mm. But I just had no sense of it. And that's so wild that you can... access is everything. Access and information is just everything. And there's so many kids that grow up without it. You know, my parents didn't know that. So they didn't know how to point me in any direction. And no teacher. I remember telling a teacher I wanted to be a TV writer. And she was just like, yeah, well, you really got to work on your grammar then. And just kind of walked off. But sure. She didn't give me any... this is how you can maybe do something like that, you know? Yeah. So I had no sense of it. So I kind of just had to figure it out in the world.
How old were you when you lost your parents?
I was 16 when my mom died, and I was a baby when my dad died. And then I was about 21 when my stepfather died, who was like the man I knew as my father my whole life.
Okay. That must have left you feeling kind of rootless.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I was just fucking... I was wild, and I didn't have, yeah, of course, I didn't have any foundation, you know? I was just kind of moving around in the world in a bit of a fog for a while, which also took, you know, time to, like, sort through all that shit mentally and emotionally. And in that process, I've discovered that I was a lesbian. So it was just a lot of stuff I had to, like, move through as a person and kind of clear before I could even see a path for myself of, like, what to do with myself.
Did you ever get any help moving through that, or was that all just a sort of reflective process of you thinking?
I mean, help, I never went to therapy or anything formal, you know, but, I mean, you meet people, you have conversations, you learn things, you see things, you grow from them, you have experiences you don't want to have again, you know, you make adjustments and just, you know, kind of live.
So when you brought yourself to comedy for the first time, when you did your first ever gig, was that a moment of, were you scared?
Yeah, well, I tried comedy, I was at like 20. So I was like 20 and I tried it like twice and it was like bad. And I was like, this doesn't feel right. It just didn't feel right. I don't know how to explain it, but it just felt, I didn't feel the thing I knew I should have been feeling. I felt very disconnected from it and it just didn't feel right. And I was like, okay, I like this thing, but I don't know. And I kind of like fell back from it a little bit. And then I got sick. I got real sick and I was in the hospital for a while, like off and on, months at a time for about a year.
Jesus. Okay.
And then once I got healthy, it was just a lot of show, my family and for my mom passing and all this shit. And I just wanted to get the fuck out of Boston. So I left and I went to Atlanta to go to school. And then I dropped out like maybe a month into being there. In 2 months. And then...
You were from Atlanta originally?
I was born in Atlanta.
Yeah, okay.
And then I just stayed in Atlanta and, like, just did a bunch of bullshit, worked and did, like, all types of different jobs there. And, like, I was fucking with music out there and, like, and hanging out with these dudes. And we were, like, creating albums. And that was cool and that was fun. And it was the first time I really worked with a group of people trying to figure something out. And that was neat. And, then I was like, oh, let's just get... I just saw my life. I don't know. I turned 29 and shit was just not working. And I just wanted to turn a corner in life. And I was like, just like try this thing that you've kind of always been dancing around. You know, I've always liked comedy still. I was still like into it. And, you know, I would mention it like to friends. Like, yeah, I tried that before. I would try it again. And like, it was kind of in my head. Like, you didn't really give this thing... a real shot, you know? You just feel it when you didn't, you know? And so I was just like, hey, just give it a real shot. But I think a lot of it, too, is just I was older and more sure of myself. When I first tried it, I wasn't out. I didn't even know I was fucking gay, you know? So by the time I came back to it at 29, I just knew who the fuck I was. I was an adult. And, like, I think a lot of that is what people see as confidence. It's just like, I'm just a grown-up, and I know what I think about things, and you're not going to fucking change my mind about what I think. I'm not a kid anymore. You can't just rattle me because you don't agree.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's like, fine, don't agree, but that doesn't mean my thought is invalid.
A lot of the stuff that I've seen you do, a lot of your material has been to do with your discovery, like your journey of discovering your sexuality, discovering that your marriage wasn't working, those kind of... like those moments when you're like you're really good. One of your that incredible skill of yours is in kind of putting us right in the moment of that realization?
Okay. What's the question?
Oh, you're right, there wasn't a question. I was trying to trick you into talking about it without asking a direct question. Well, I mean, do you agree with that?
I guess if that's what the audience feels like is going on, then that's what's going on. I don't know if I'm particularly trying to do that or I just try to tell the shit from an honest perspective about how I feel about it. And I just try to be vulnerable because I think that's where you get the shit from that makes it good. It's like,
talk about that. Go on. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you're really good at being vulnerable. And you're so powerful and you're so vulnerable. So what is that? What is that stuff?
I mean, it's just like when you're vulnerable to anything, then it's this is gonna sound so fucking
please,
corny.
Go on. This is what we want.
This is so lame. But when you're vulnerable in anything, then it's working through you and you're not working for it. So it's like you have to kind of give yourself to it. Or I feel like the audience can also tell the disingenuous nature of it. And I've never liked that about comedy. I don't like comedy where I feel like you're trying to trick me. Like, I don't need to believe it happened to you yesterday. I'm not a fucking idiot. You can just, like, tell me the thing. You know what I mean? I don't need to believe. Like, I just don't do that because I feel like that's not where we're discovering shit and that's not where we are growing together because it's still like it's art and it should push people and they should be thinking and you should be thinking and you should be growing while you're doing it. You should be discovering shit. That's why I don't get just going out and doing the same set every night. It's like, this is an opportunity to dialogue with people. And if you should be changing as much as they're changing. Sometimes even on stage, I'll like to figure out something. I'm like, oh, I don't even think that way anymore. I've talked through this thought and now I'm at the end of it. And I'm like, oh, that's not even, I don't have that original opinion because it's always changing and growing in that way. And you should be changing and growing in that way. And I don't think you can do that without being vulnerable. Like you can't change in life if you're not vulnerable, you know? So the vulnerability part of it is just the only way, again, it doesn't feel gross. Because if I'm not vulnerable and I'm not being honest, then I'm giving you some prepackaged thing and I'm making up fucking scenarios to tell jokes, which I hate. I hate that. I hate when it's like, no, nobody threw up on your shoe. And no, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just know this didn't happen to you. I hate that. And I just don't feel I don't feel a need to do that. If you're doing it, by all means, fucking have at it. I just don't see a purpose in that at all. That's why I don't do segues a lot. I just feel like all that shit is stupid. Why do I have to fucking make up a thing just to talk? Like, I just want to talk about this now. Why can't I just talk about this now? Why do I have to trick you into thinking it's all one thought? Just fucking don't be an idiot. And I don't know. I have more faith in audiences, I guess, that they can, like, comprehend without all the, like, dumb trickery in the middle.
Do you ever find yourself, have you ever found yourself being dishonest on stage out of a sense of like not wanting to reveal or when you're working something out, you don't know how much of your true self to say.
Yes.
So you maybe protect yourself with a bit that's a bit.
I think it happens all the time. I think I have a bunch of these little safe bits that I like kind of circle around things that I feel are more dangerous or I'm not sure about for sure.
Could you give us an example of like a safe bit?
Like making fun of like Apple Android phones. It's like, come on, this is A to B shit. It's not women peeing standing up, but
sure. Sometimes
when I'm not so sure about how to get to women peeing standing up, it's like, I need this little Apple iPhone shit just to get over here. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that has a value, doesn't it? You have to reset. You can't just be going, this is my perspective.
Right. It's like, you just got to be a human in it sometimes too and just fucking goofy. And, you know, as much as it is a little like, you know, one of those kind of cushiony jokes, it's fun for me because it's just goofy too. It has no value outside of purely just being stupid, which it's fun to have, you know?
So So this is Sam. Great pleasure to be talking to her. And my thanks to Soho Theatre. I should have said at the very top of the show, Soho Theatre very kindly lent us some space in which to record during Sam's run there. And coming up next week or the week after, and thanks also to Soho for this, Neil Hamburger, a.k.a. Greg Turkington. If you're not familiar with the act Neil Hamburger, how could I possibly do it justice by describing it? He is America's funny man. He is a sort of, his hair is slathered with goop over a sort of awful comb over. He's a sort of fading vaudevillian stand-up, and he is probably the single most offensive comic that I'd be prepared to have on this show, because he's an act and it's a character, and the character, what is it about? It's kind of like a, you know, the way, if you're familiar with Nick Helm's work, Nick Helm is this sort of disintegrating, anger-sodden state of a comic, and that's kind of the clown, if you like. That's the that's the basis of it all, is the knowingness of being that appalling person. Well, Neil Hamburger is like, he's playing similar notes on a much more violent, creakier instrument, an instrument much more imbued with the stench of death. How's that? Maybe I'll make a note of that for the show notes for that episode. But that one won't be next week. It'll be the week after or the week after that, because next episode of the podcast, and it will either be in a week or there will be a little gap while we finish the edit, next week is episode 300. If you were listening a few weeks ago, you will know what's going to be on it. Rest assured, it is something very special. A galaxy of stars will feature, and the guest will be yours truly. I've recorded three chunks of that interview, of that sort of joint interview. I'm being interviewed by Sarah Millican, Sindhu V, and Tom Allen, all in the room. And I have a host of excellent comics who are big fans and listeners to the show, who have emailed in recordings of questions. It is, as you can imagine, both terrifying for me and an administrative nightmare. Hopefully it will be out next week, but give us a week just in case it isn't. That's all the trailer I'm going to do. Sam, you can look at her stuff online. She has an album on Spotify called Donna's Daughter. Highly recommend that. You can absolutely hear her murdering the room. And it's, as we discussed briefly, it kind of phases in and out of sort of interludes and elements of conversation and stuff. So it's a really interesting piece of work, as well as being a very, very funny album indeed. Get your Greg Turkington / Neil Hamburger research done in advance of episode 301 or 2. And remember, you can book tickets for my own solo stand-up show, a work in progress called Primer, at 3 o'clock at the Monkey Barrel, all throughout Edinburgh. If you're in the Insiders Club, there will be some special treaty things coming your way. And once they're sold out to insiders, I will open them up to the Facebook group. So join up there if you'd like to be kept abreast of that. That's all for now. Let's return to this conversation with the fantastic Sam J.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One of your great strengths, I think, is in taking your life story and finding a bigger perspective in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bit in your album about eating ass, which is like a really, it's a really graphic bit. Mm-hmm. But you're using it as a lens through which to look at commitment in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
I don't...
Like, is that a thing you're doing consciously?
No, it's just how I see the fucking world. It truly is just how I see things. I don't know why. Even my girlfriend hates it. She's like, you always... You overthink everything. You overanalyze everything. it's not that deep. And I'm like, everything is that deep. Everything has a meaning behind it. Everything has a purpose. You don't say things for no reason. You may not always be conscious of it, but there is something rooted in all behaviors. I just believe that. And so it's just how I see shit. It's like, that's stuff I really thought about when I thought about the fact that I ate ass. Like, that's what went through my head. You know what I mean? The whys, the what was motivating me, all of that. It's just like, it's just the shit I be thinking, honestly.
And is there, does it cost you something to say it out loud?
What do you mean?
Well, like, in the sense that you are, I know you're making yourself vulnerable. Is it ever scary to make yourself vulnerable? You might anger people in your life by telling the unvarnished
sanity,
truth about
it. It costs you your sanity. Like, this whole shit is fucking crazy, and it's very crazy to tell your, like, deepest, darkest shit to a room full of strangers, and you have to be a bit off to do it. And every time you do it, you are giving some of yourself to these people to, like, kind of do whatever they will. And, yeah, it feels... Yeah. Yeah. It makes you a little nutty, for sure. I mean, there's times where I just want to be alone and not talk to anyone. I feel like it's because I'm just giving and talking and just downloading so much of my energy into people all the time that you just kind of get fucking tapped. You know what I mean? Just logically, anybody would. So I think it's tough because when I'm not on stage and I'm not doing it, you know, my girl a lot of times, she's like, you're just sitting here quiet. You're not saying anything. And I'm like, I don't have anything else to fucking say. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't want to talk. And it's not that I don't love you. I don't enjoy your company. Like, I like that you're right here, but I just have no need to speak to you at all. I don't want to speak to anyone. It's not a thing. I just don't feel like speaking, you know? Which I find myself in that state a lot. I'm just like, I don't want to talk.
Do you think that you are an introverted person?
I mean, that's such a corny fucking thing to say. And I feel like every comic says that, which is like, oh, yeah, I'm actually a fucking introvert. So it's like lame. So I'm not going to do that.
I'm so glad I didn't go into that question like I was going to.
I just don't always want to fucking talk to people, I think. I think you're just talking so much. And it's like, especially if people enjoy you, they want your energy after the show. They want to talk to you about why you think certain things. And like, you're just fucking constantly, you know, giving that. I think sometimes you're just like, I'm fucking good, man. I don't want to engage. I think that's all it is. I wouldn't call myself an introvert.
When you were what were you eating on stage last night?
Some candy.
Never seen anyone unwrap. I mean, I'd call that a sweet, but I'll feel disingenuous if I say candy, but there we go. You unwrap it, like eat half of it. And then do a bit more of your set and then go back to it. Do you feel empowered on stage? Do you feel like you can talk about anything? And
yeah, I feel like there's nothing off limits. You know what I mean? I just feel like I talk about things when I'm ready to talk about them. So, like, the stuff that I'm doing about my mom right now is the first time I've really, really tried to really attempt to joke about my mom and, like, growing up. I think I did one before when I first was kind of like starting out that I probably lasted about 6 months and then kind of just phased out of my routine and kind of grew into the white guys playing bit. But I don't think I was doing it just because I didn't know what I wanted to say. I didn't know what story I wanted to tell. I didn't know what angle, you know. It's still a sensitive thing for me, of course. I just didn't know what I wanted to say or what I wanted to say about her or our relationship. And then I've been thinking about kids myself, and it made me think back to that story. And so I've been, like, just telling the story because it makes sense to me right now. It just seems to fit in the world that I'm in. And that's how I pick how to talk about things. It's really that simple. It's like, does it make sense? Does it feel good? All right, let's try it until I don't want to say it anymore. And then I'll just stop saying it. And that's kind of when I know I'm done with a joke, too. It's just, it naturally will just, I just won't say it anymore. And I'll be like, oh, you don't say that anymore.
Do you write stuff down? Or is it all set on stage?
I jot things down. Sometimes it will be a whole, like, it will be pretty beat out. Sometimes it'll just be a premise or like a topic idea that I kind of want to talk through. Little notes kind of scattered around everywhere. I like to believe it's more organized than it is, and most of it is just up here moving around. But I do have like little references all over the place that no one would be able to understand but me, probably.
Okay.
If you tried to read it, it's just like booty cheeks, cheese.
And is that how you always done it?
Pepperonis, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Just, you know. Because I guess I just try to keep it as conversational as possible. And I feel like if you, like when I first, you're making me think about early. I think every comic makes a lot of these same dumb mistakes. And they listen to other like dumbass comics who don't know shit and who are passing on bad information. And so at first, especially when you start in a small town, like it's just a small town mentality and everyone's like telling you what the industry wants. But no one's ever even, you know, the industry's like fucking Oz and no one's seen it. But they're like, they don't like it when you know what I mean? And you're like, no, you don't fucking, no one knows. But you believe these people because they've been doing it longer, so they must know. So I think early I was trying to do shit a certain way. And Boston's a very white guy town, and they've got their old guard and kind of their beliefs in how stand-up should be. And so I was definitely trying to, like, you know, I was paying attention to my laughs per minute and just fucking dumb stuff that doesn't matter, you know what I mean? And like I was getting caught up on words, like I was trying to write out just because everybody was writing, you know what I mean? And I was like, well, I guess that's how you're studious at this, and you prove that you really want to do it, you have to fucking write, you know? So I was trying, and then I'd get on stage and I'd be like, I was trying to say it exactly how I wrote it, and then when it wasn't coming out how I wrote it, I was getting like thrown off, and it was just like, this is not how I'm funny. I'm not funny like this. And it wasn't that it was not successful, but it didn't feel great. And I was like, this is not how I'm funny. I'm funny when it feels natural. I'm funny when it feels conversational. So I had to just do something for myself so that it felt, I wanted it to always feel on stage how it feels when I'm just talking to people. And I was like, as long as I feel that way when I'm up there, then I know that the right cylinders are like clicking and shit, you know? So I just started to fucking write the premise and then just be like, just talk, just, and you'll figure out the beats. And then once I hit it and I'm like, yeah, there's the punchline, and then I just say it that way most of the time, little tweaks here and there depending on where I'm at, or I might have an experience that changes it a little bit. But then that's kind of how I'll figure out what the joke is. And then that's the joke. And then, you know, move on to the next thing and just take the idea, and then I use mics and shit to just take the idea and like talk about it from every angle. That's why I hate when people record comics and like release shit, because like, you just never know where they're at in the process of what it is. And for me, I have to talk things down. Like I have to go down a really dark path with it, and then I have to be like, all right, that was too dark, and yeah, then I kind of like pull myself out and like before I figure out what it is, you know. So that's just the way that it works for me. I couldn't be a laughs per minute person. That was just insane. And once I stopped even thinking about all that shit, I got a lot better at stand up. Kind of exponentially too. It was just like once I was like, I think I did that shit for like 2 weeks, and I was just like, this is fucking stupid.
Did that process of you finding out how you do it, that presumably happened at the same time as the industry started to take notice of you? You started to get more interest in your career?
Yeah, I think like once I started doing it that way, that yeah, I started to stand out in Boston, you know, because it wasn't a lot of me. I was probably the only lesbian, especially black lesbian, on the scene at the time. So it was like you're already kind of different than what everything that's going on. And then when I just started to kind of figure out my flow, it was like, oh, yeah, let's just book this girl more. This is cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then from that, I just started going to New York and shit and started getting on some radars and stuff like that. And then festivals, of course, are like a huge way to do it. I don't know anymore. It changes so much. I don't know what kids are doing now. But 5 years ago, festivals were like everything.
Yeah?
I mean, if you were from a little town, if you could go to a festival and fuck some shit up, it was a good way to get out.
So what kind of festivals were you doing?
I did Bridgetown in Portland. I did Riot LA. Those were probably the big ones that I...
Did you sketch fest?
That I did later, but I was already, yeah, like, doing shit. But, like, Bridgetown and Riot were, like, no one knew who the fuck I was. And then after Riot was the first one I did. And I got Riot LA because Hamid he is from Massachusetts, so he was out there with his wife, who I cannot remember her fucking name. I think it's Audrey, but shit, I can't remember her name. That's fucked up. But she runs Riot LA. I feel really bad for forgetting her name. Damn. But she ran Riot, and she came out with him, and he was at the Comedy Studio in Cambridge, and I was there, and she saw me there. And then a year later, she invited me down to do Riot. She was like, if you can get to L.A., you know, we'd love to have you. And I was like, this is my opportunity to get the fuck out of the city. I was like, oh, God, if I could just go to L.A. and crush this shit and some reps see me or somebody, it'll be a path to get out of here. So I went to L.A. with, like, all this, like, I'm going to fucking destroy this shit, like, focus, because I just was like, I need to get the fuck out of the city. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. So went to Riot, had really, really good sets, and then got invited to Bridgetown. But, like, some Comedy Central people had seen me at Riot and stuff. And then when they saw me again at Bridgetown, and I had really good sets at Bridgetown, I met my manager at Bridgetown. And then from there, it just started to, like, move. It was like, I met my manager at Bridgetown, and then I got comics to watch, and then shit just started to happen.
Yeah, so the festival route really worked. Because you had the right product. I hate myself for using that term, but you know what I mean? Like, it's an industry, and if you want to get out of somewhere, you've got to... Was that useful energy, do you feel, to go in with that kind of, I really need this?
Yeah.
In what way? Did it make you work harder or do more sets? Or is it just that you bit down harder?
I think I just bit down harder and I wasn't going to, like, yeah, I just bit down harder. I needed to get the fuck out of Boston. And I knew, like, I knew it was ready enough that if the right people could just see it, we could start to make some shit happen. I just knew it was like, yeah, it's there. You know what I'm saying? But still, I had to still move. I had to move to L.A., and I had to, like, figure out the L.A. scene, and I had to, like, grind it out there, you know what I mean? And, like, it wasn't easy, because you basically got to go start all over, you know what I'm saying? And, like, motherfuckers don't know you, and it's still, like, their town and their territorial, and you got to, like, go through all that shit.
That sense you had of, if I can get there, if I can get seen, I can make something happen. I think every comic that starts has that, has a variation on that. They've got some sense of, of, like... I can be the person, I can be the one. And a lot of them probably are deluded. Mm-hmm. Did you feel it in a different way? Did you feel it in a...
I can't answer that because I don't know how they feel it. I can only know how I felt it. And we might be feeling the same exact shit. Isn't that what makes this shit scary? Is that, like, you have to fucking be delusional and believe your own delusions, you know? Because fuck if I know, they probably felt the same exact way I feel. Some it just works for some people and it fucking doesn't for other people. That's the scariest shit about it. It's like you ever watch a comic and he's on stage and he's just eating it and he's so fucking delusional and he's so just, and you're just like, you have no sense of any of what the fuck this is. And you can tell he's just convinced he's the fucking best. And why do we hate that guy so much? Because a part of us is like, what if that's what the fuck we look like? Like, it's quite possible that I'm just as delusional, you know? So I don't know, man.
When you started doing festivals, when you moved to LA, did you, when you started getting seen at LA, is that when you started meeting other black lesbian comics? And you, like, have you got more of a kind of network of people like you?
No. I mean, I think just over time I started meeting more. It wasn't specifically LA, but just over time. But even that, I don't think I've met a million, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I feel like there's like
enough for
me,
a WhatsApp group.
Paris, Sashay, Wanda Sykes, you know what I mean? Like, and I know there's others, you know what I'm saying? Like, you meet them all around, like mics and shit, but who remembers everybody? You meet so many people doing this, it's like hard. But no, we're not like having meetings or nothing. There's nothing like that's going on. We're not having like black lesbian comic chats.
And do you have a
Gina Yashir?
Yeah, of course. Do you have a strategic eye on your career, or are you just being true to your art?
Oh man, this is so dumb. All this stuff makes you just sound fucking crazy. I'm like an asshole. I mean, of course I have a strategic eye on my career. I would be an asshole to just go, I'm just letting it all happen. Like,
and what some people are.
I'm not just, nobody.
Not many Americans, I know.
Nobody is. Anyone saying that to you is lying. They fucking care. And they're strategy. You can't get here without some level of strategy. It's just like those rappers who, like, I didn't even want to rap. It's like, then you wouldn't be fucking a rapper. You had to try.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you had a manager. I was just selling drugs. No, nigga, you had a manager.
Yeah.
Like, you attempted to be great at something. That's okay. You know what I'm saying? But, like, there's no way. Of course I have a strategy. Of course, at least I think about it, and I have things that I want to happen a certain way. Am I okay if they don't? Yes. I'm completely fine if they don't. I'm completely patient. It's cool. But, yeah, I have things I want.
What sort of things do you want?
No, I don't want to talk about it, but I have things I want.
Is Britain part of the thing? Have you got an eye on, like, are you over here to work out material? Are you over here to land and make Britain one of the places you go?
I mean, I would love to be able to work here. I find the audience is fun and smart. Did I come here, like, gotta get Britain, gotta get this British market? Nah, I don't really move like that, because you don't know what the fuck, you don't know how you're gonna be somewhere, you know, like, they might be totally turned off by you, and that's, again, if that's fine, you know. So my goal was to see how my shit played in front of a British audience and just start to get a global feel for my stuff, you know. I've only worked in the States. You know, I just started leaving this year. I went to Australia and Dublin last year. It was my first time out of America, was Dublin for that Vodafone Festival. And then Australia. So, you know, especially because I'm building an hour, you know, that, you know, hopefully will be my first special. I just want it to feel global. I don't want it to feel stupid. And I know I have all these, like, lofty ideas about race and politics, and I feel like it would be half-assed of me to not get a world stamp on that, you know, because at some level you're elevating yourself when you're a comic, because you're standing on a stage and you're telling people they should pay to listen to you. And if I'm gonna sit up there and talk about all this shit, it's just a part of my job to get as many perspectives on it as I can. That is my job, you know. If there's a job aspect to it, then that's it. And so coming here is about growing, because I have to continue to grow it or it won't feed me.
So when you started writing for SNL, you were like, that's less common, isn't it, that you're a stand-up in the writer's room than a sketch writer?
No, Leslie started as a writer. Che started as a writer. It happens. It doesn't not happen.
And how do you find writing for SNL compared to
compared to
writing your own stand-up, given that your own stand-up is
the SNL question? No,
is that the question everyone asks
all the time?
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's probably what people want to know.
Well, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a stand-up. I don't write sketches. I don't write for other people. I would be horrified to go into a room and go, oh, shit, something, a format is expected of me. How do I fit my own very loose system into...
You just got to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I had never written a sketch before. It definitely was intimidating. I didn't know what I was fucking doing. I mean, I understood funny. I had a sense of that. But I didn't really have a sense of, like... I've never written a sketch, so I didn't know what I was doing, and they were bad it's just like all of this shit, though. You just gotta be willing to fucking fail, and you can't be bigger than failing, and you gotta know it's gonna kick your ass, and you're not gonna know everything, but if you are, you know, determined, and you're just gonna keep getting back up, then the shit will fucking work itself out, and you don't necessarily know what that is gonna be. It might have been getting fired from SNL for me. Maybe SNL wasn't my fucking thing now, and I would have just had to accept that. I might not have taken to it, but I did. You know what I'm saying? I was kind of willing for it to go either way, but I was just like, I'm just try my hardest, because that's all I could really do. You know, like, I got to be here anyway. So I'm going to try to figure out how to write these sketches. I'm sorry. I feel like I'll give these very just like answers, but I don't know. That's just, you can't think about it beyond that, because the fact is I don't write a sketch. So if I go in there like, I'm going to kill this fucking room, that's stupid, because I've never even done it. You know what I mean? Or if I go in there with all this pressure, like people are going to laugh because I don't know what I'm, it's like, well, they probably will because I don't know what I'm doing, and that's fine. And like, this shit's going to be bad for a while. I just kind of felt like I went in knowing like, you're going to be bad at this for a while and it's just going to suck and you're just going to have to suck it up.
That's impressive. I think that is like that, to go into something and go, this is going to be bad and I'm going to cope with it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to have the mentality.
Yeah, I just knew. I never done it. And I was doing it with the best people to do it, on the highest level to do it. And some of these motherfuckers have gone to Harvard for this shit. And, like, I've never written anything that wasn't for myself. You know what I'm saying? So, and then sketch, that's a whole other way to write, too. It's not... Like, I've written pilots, but they were me-centric, and I was creating every character out of my head. Whereas when you're writing sketch, it's like, you have to write for the people. So you have to learn, you have to cast your own sketch. You do a lot there, and you have to learn how to do every part of it. So I even had to learn how to cast, which means you have to learn the fucking cast. So for a while, my sketches weren't even casted right. You know what I mean? They just, it wasn't what everyone shines in. And that took time to learn. I just had to watch. I had to watch them. I had to watch what they like to do. I had to watch at the table. At table reads, you can see when people come alive. Pay attention to the shit they write for themselves. What kind of characters they write for themselves. Like, when Beck puts something on the table, what does it sound like? What type of guy is he playing? Because that's the type of guy he likes to play. And if you can write stuff and cast them in things that they are going to get excited about, then they bring more energy to the table. They bring more energy to the piece. It makes the piece better. But you have to learn all that. You have to learn all the parts and how they all move together. And then how to get your voice into that, which is just a whole nother bag of shit. It's a lot of failing, and you just have to be fine with it. But it was fine. I needed to fail. So it was fine. It's like, that's a part of growth too, is less, you can't just always win or you don't grow. So it was like, I needed something that was going to kick my ass and kind of, it was just time to learn another part of it too, I think, stand up. It was just like, I had a pretty good handle on stand up and I knew where I see what to do with that. And it was like, okay, I was getting bored. You know, it's feeling boring because you do something every day. And I've been doing stand-up every day at that point for like 5 years. You get bored with anything. So it was getting boring too, where I was just like, this doesn't feel challenging. And so SNL was a great way to be challenged. It was a way to step back from stand-up a little bit so I could get some fresh eyes on it. It was also a way to learn a new muscle and a new tool in comedy, which opened up for me writing, period, which I really enjoy more than I thought I would. And it just allows me to be a multifaceted and multi-layered comedian, which allows me to create a career. It's like, the more tools I have, the more things I can do, the more ways I can control me, which is the product, and how I get to create and what I get to put into the world. And so I think it was essential for that. But yeah, it was super, super hard. It's still hard. I mean, I cried at least 4 times this season. I probably cry every season. It's just a lot.
Are you happy?
You know, some days, yeah. Some days, no. I think I'm like fucking a human, and I'm like dark and fucked up a lot, and a lot of bad shit happened to me. So I spend, you know, it's about a 50-50. I say 50% of the time I'm happy. 50% of the time I'm depressed.
That's not bad. I mean, Russia, 50-50 is all right.
I feel like it's good. Like, I don't know how you like live and you're like fucking aware and you don't have anxiety and shit like that. I don't get how you could be walking around this world and not have certain shit going on in your head. You know what I mean? So being like sad or having bouts of sadness doesn't really bother me. It's just like a part of the process.
That sounds very...
So overall, yeah, I'm happy.
The way you talk about, I know you said you never had any therapy, but the way you talk about your growth and your development, your relationship to, you know, sadness and the process and being happy to fail, that feels like all of that stuff is really good mental health.
I think I just didn't want to, I don't know. I was in such a dark place after my mom died, and like, if, you know, I just kind of had to pull on, like, myself to get myself out of it, and I had to learn some tools to get through, and that was a part of it. It was just, a lot of it was just acceptance. Just being like, you know, the things you can't control, you can't control, and the things you can't, you can't. And what you can always control is yourself, but you can never control what anyone's going to do. But you can always control what you're going to do, how you're going to react. And once I kind of took that power for myself, I was a lot happier because I felt in control. I didn't feel like life was happening to me anymore. It was like I was an active participant rather than shit just happening to me. And once I put myself in that position to be in control of my shit and a participant in my life instead of a passerby in my life, then it made the low times easier. And I had been lower. So it was just like, yeah, shit, you be sad sometimes, it's fine. My mom died when I was 16. You know, my dad died when I was a baby. My stepdad died when I was 21. My brother spent a long time in jail for, like, my teens, and he was, like, my best friend. Like, nigga, I'm gonna be sad. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like, sad shit has happened to me. It's okay. Sometimes I'm gonna think about that shit, and it's gonna make me sad. That's a part of life. I can't erase what happened, and I'm not gonna act like it doesn't hurt. But you just can't dwell on it too long. And you can't let it stop you from doing what the fuck you're doing, because that's kind of productive.
Do you think stand-up, the outlet that stand-up gives you to talk about the way you see the world, has that helped? Has that had like a healing factor?
I just think it gave me purpose. I think that everybody knows that, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was just like moving through the world and knowing I was supposed to be doing something, but knowing that I'm not doing it and just knowing I wasn't living to my potential. I think that was the most depressing thing. Of all the shit that was going on with me, what was depressing me the most was that I wasn't living up to my potential and I wasn't doing anything. And I was just watching my life pass me by, and that was scary. It was like, what if you never get a handle on this shit, bruh? And you 35, and that's the age that was just stuck in my head for some reason. When I was 29, it was just like, yo, you cannot be doing this same shit at 35, because then it's over. Then it's a wrap. If you still here at 35, you ain't never gonna get out. You still gonna be here, you know, in this dark place where you know you're supposed to be doing something greater than what you're doing. Like, I know I'm not supposed to be sitting in no cubicle sorting fucking mail. Like, this feels like death. So I think in that sense, stand-up saved me. I don't know if I probably would have killed myself if I was still doing that shit, because you feel so trapped. Like, there's no way out. But you know, it's like wearing something that doesn't fit you, and you gotta wear that shit every day. It's crazy. Shit drives you nuts. So stand-up it was like, oh, this is what you're supposed to be doing. It made me feel like a part of the world. Like, oh, you're here now, finally. You're not just moving through.
Thanks, Sam.
So that was Sam. No post-amble this week. It just remains for me to thank Sam J once again for coming on. Thank you to Florrie for her part in putting that together. Thank you to Soho Theatre and Sarah Dodd in particular for helping me out. Thanks to Dimple Powell, who also helped sort that recording space and looked after me on the day. Thank you to Robs Mountain for the music. The producer was Nathan Wood, and the logging was done by Jake Crossland and the podcast correspondent, Peter Dobbing. That's all the thank yous. That's all the chat. Follow me at ComComPod on Instagram and Twitter. Join the Facebook group for all of your insider info. And go to comedianscomedian.com/insiders for extra material from any episode that has extra material, which is quite a few of them now. 40 or something? Bloody loads of them. Right, that's that. No post-amble this week. I am shattered. Goodbye!